Here we go.
Blog Talk Radio.
We got the intro going. And I don't hear our intro again tonight. I have it pressed.
That's
and it's
all
not
right.
working.
Well, we have a great intro. Our guest is our intro. So anyway, good evening, everybody. Welcome to Applause Radio Show, sponsored by KWV Wines, the show that gets you one step closer to your favorite celebrity. John and I would like to welcome Chris Nunley, lead singer from the Royal Guardsmen. They had a hit song, Snoopy versus the Red Baron, in 1966, and then a follow-up Christmas song, the follow-up Christmas song, and the return of the Red Baron, and a Snoopy's Christmas. So, Chris, you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, Mr. Chris Nunley, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing today?
Great. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, we're happy to have you. You kidding? Thank you.
I am not kidding.
Well, do you want to start off, or you'd like me to start off, or John, you have a question?
Ask me a question.
All right.
Well,
you got one, John?
I want to know how did you guys start playing Christmas music as a rock band?
Well, it was, they needed a follow-up to Snoopy versus the Red Baron in 67. And that was early in the year, and it did okay, but not as well as the original. And then with Christmas season of 67 coming up, they said, you know, we ought to do a Christmas song. So this was the producers and the record label.
Right.
So they put a song together, and it turned out to be fun. And in fact, Snoopy's Christmas is my favorite of all the Snoopy songs that we did.
Oh, great.
And it comes back every year. It's got a great message about, you know, let's put aside the war. Let's belong together and everybody have a good holiday.
Right. I love the story. It's a true story, too, which is amazing. But what I found surprising was that Phil Gernhardt and Dick Holler, who wrote the Snoopy songs for you, did you write the Snoopy song, Christmas one, or did they write that one as well?
They wrote that one, too.
Okay, I was really surprised that he wrote so much novelty stuff because he's written so many other amazing things. I mean, Stay, which was, I love that song. He also produced with Lobo and another great band. And he wrote the classic Abraham, Martin, and John. I mean,
yeah, that was Dick Holler himself.
Oh, he wrote it by himself. Okay.
I don't think Phil wrote anything, had anything to do with the writing of that.
Well, you know, as a songwriter, I mean, you know, you want something, not that you set out to write a song to make sure it sells and you get money the rest of your life, but a novelty song lives forever, and a Christmas song, you know you're getting a check every year, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point, but still, the fact that it comes back every year and brings a message of hope and
right.
Love for humanity and everything. Let's put aside the weapons and let's just celebrate the spirit of Christmas.
Right, and it's actually a true story if people don't know that, that during the war, World War One, I think it was it the Germans and the British? They said, let's call a truce for Christmas, and they got together. They put down their weapons, and they got together and just had a beautiful day to celebrate.
Well, somebody found a soccer ball, and they actually played soccer between the German lines and the British lines.
Wow, that's amazing.
Christmas Eve truce.
Yeah, amazing. And then next day after that, they went back to killing each other. Unbelievable. So I wanted to ask you about your earlier part of your career. The original band name was the Posmen. Is that Posmen or Posmen?
Posmen.
Posmen. And what was that derived of, Posmen?
Well, the bass player for the Royal Guardsmen, his father was a mail carrier.
Ah, gotcha.
And so they called it the Posmen without the T.
Yeah.
And then when the Beatles hit it big, everybody had to have box equipment, and there was a music store here in Ocala, Florida, where we all lived.
Yeah.
That started selling Vox equipment, and
right.
So everybody went into Hawk and got amplifiers and guitars and everything, and somebody said, what's the name of your band? And our drummer looked at one of the amplifiers, and it was a Vox Royal Guardsman. He said, we're the Royal Guardsman.
Ah, And that came out, that's great, because it came out right at the right time because of loyal guardsmen, guardsmen relating to possibly the war of the fight with Snoopy and the Royal with the British invasion coming along. That's great. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool when he came up with that. That kind of, you know, goes hand in hand, you know. So
pretty fortunate.
Yeah, yeah. So the Posman, how did they do when you were with them as the Posman? I mean, did you have anything on the radio as the Posman, or definitely?
No, not at all.
Just
a local cover band doing the songs that were popular at the time, the Rolling Stones and the Animals and the Birds.
Right.
And when we changed to the Royal Guardsmen, we had a few personnel changes, but the drummer and bass player who started the Postman that became the Royal Guardsmen, we were still just a local cover band. And
right.
We sent a tape to a radio station in Tampa. They invited us to come down for a local band show called The Shower of Stars, and that's where Phil Gernhardt heard us play, and he came up to us with a like an 8x11 or 8x14 legal pad, yellow legal pad, with the lyrics to Snoopy versus the Red Baron on it. And he said, I've been talking to bands in the Tampa area here, because there were lots of bands down there, of course.
Yeah.
And he said, I think this song could be a hit. Why don't you guys work up a treatment of it, and I'll come up, see you next week, and we'll see what you came up with. So we used to rehearse every other day in Ocala, and it got to be Thursday, and we said, hey, man, that Phil guy is going to be coming up here, tomorrow or the next day. We ought to see what we can throw together. Let's just play it real kind of hokey and almost country center. It ticked after the turn of the century.
Yeah.
And so he came up, and we played it for him. He said, kind of like that. Play it again. So we played the song again, and he went over by the speaker, the PA speaker, put his ear right up against it. That's how they used to listen to records back in the days of mono 45s, monaural sound. And I said, that's kind of cool. I said, let's cut a demo tape in Tampa, and I'll send it up to several labels. Phil was an independent producer, and Lori Records, who turned out to be the label that Snoopy songs, amongst others, were on. And they said, yeah, we like it. So a few weeks after we cut the demo, it was being played on WLS, WBT, huge station nationwide.
Why did they release it to Canada first, or no?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. I didn't understand. You say again, please.
Did they release it to Canada first, and why?
Well, not really.
Oh, okay, because I got information that it was released in Canada first.
Well, it was, but it wasn't first.
Okay.
In countries where proper English is spoken,
right.
Term at that time, 50 years ago, when you said bloody, that was not a polite phrase. And
right.
Bloody Baron was in the song, so they didn't play it in England, Canada, Australia, New Zealand. And they said,
right. To them, it's a curse, right?
Yeah, it was almost like a curse word.
Right, right, right.
The thing was, they had not talked to Charles Schulz at all about using Snoopy. And at that time, Schulz had just started drawing Snoopy sitting on his doghouse and saying,
right.
Curse you, Red Baron.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. Okay, it's 1967. How old are you then?
67, I was 21.
Okay, so 21 years old, it's 1967, and you guys are together hanging out, just jamming, trying, doing the club scene and everything, trying to get ahead. And this guy approaches you and says, I got this song for you, blah, blah, blah. And how popular was Snoopy at that time is the question.
Snoopy was a peanuts comic strip. I mean, it was in every newspaper, and they had the TV specials for Christmas and Halloween and all that. And actually, Snoopy versus the Red Baron was cut in 66, probably September, and it was released to national radio the week before Thanksgiving in 66.
66, and then it blew up in 67.
So
I
was just barely, I was 20, and I was the oldest guy in the band.
Right, right, and you got a gold record for it, too.
Yes, I did.
Yep, that's great. cool. And now,
hey Joanne, I got our buddy
yes.
Dan Carlson on the line, and he
oh,
wants to talk
to Dan.
Chris.
Oh man,
let me see
him.
I get booed. Dan, go ahead, Dan.
Yeah.
Hi, honey. Right. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay. I told him I'd call in.
Yes, I'm glad you did. Go ahead, talk to your buddy.
Yeah.
Hello, Dan.
Hey, how you doing, guy?
So far, so good.
Yeah. I can't seem to get it to pick up the station tonight, so I just hear you on the phone right now. So I haven't heard what all you've been talking about. I know you told her about Snoopy versus the Red Baron. You were talking about that. And
we're talking about how his career started and everything like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, amazing start. Basically kind of stepped in shit along the way, having this producer show up to see them, which is fantastic. And he loved them and, you know, gave them one of the biggest novelty songs out there.
Yeah. And then
it was quite a trip, as we used to say back in the 60s.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. What was going on then? Like, okay, you're 21. All of a sudden, you blew up. You've got this hit. And it's like, oh, my God, obviously, right? So you're freaking out. And over Snoopy. I mean, don't you find that crazy in a way? I mean, because...
Yeah. Well, we considered ourselves serious musicians.
Of course. No. Definitely. I didn't mean it that way. I'm just saying, like, oh, my God. Like, we did what was the first one you did? It was Can't Wait or I Can't Wait? I'm sorry.
Baby, Let's Wait.
Oh, Baby, Let's Wait. And then Snoopy is what takes off. I mean, it's a great song. Don't get me wrong. I mean, this song will live forever. It's fantastic. But, I mean, you must have been so high on just the fact of what was going on. And now, did they kind of think of that song because of the fact the war was going on, or am I wrong on the year? I was only a baby then, so.
Vietnam was going on at the time.
Right. So you think that kind of influenced why, you know, Snoopy versus the Red Baron, like an American icon, Snoopy versus the enemy? You think maybe that's why people liked it so much?
Well, it's a funny story. We have played some shows in the past since those days, you know, maybe 20, 30 years after Snoopy first hit the market.
Hmm.
And people have come up to us and say, I was in a Marine Air Corps base in Vietnam or Navy or whatever service. And they said, instead of when it was time to scramble the jets and get up in the sky, instead of the horn going bah, 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 they did the intro to Snoopy versus the Red Baron.
Wow, how cool is
jets.
That? How cool is that?
It was time to get in their jets and grab some sky time in the air. What they heard was, Achtung, jetzt versingen zusammen die Geschichte über den schweinkopfenden Hund und den lieben Red Baron.
Right, which means, attention, guess.
We will now sing together the story or the history of the pig-headed dog and the beloved Red Baron, because the guy saying it is German. So he doesn't care for Snoopy. He loves
right.
the Red Baron. So it's
of
the pig-headed
course, yeah.
dog and the beloved uh-huh. Red Baron.
Right, cool. Very interesting.
I was wanting
story.
To know how many of the Red Baron songs they did.
Well, actually, they were three. And there was Snoopy versus the Red Baron,
right.
Return of the Red Baron,
mm-hmm.
Snoopy's Christmas, which had the Red Baron in it. And there was a fourth one that was just as it was released. It was called Snoopy for President, but very few people heard it, because they pulled it off the market just a week or two after they released that song. Bobby Kennedy was killed.
Oh, so yeah, forget that.
In 1968.
That wasn't going to play then, yeah, right. So it's amazing to me that so many people have covered the song. I mean, you've had Irish, British, Italian, Spanish, Brazilian, Finland, people from Finland, and even a book. You know, emulated out of it called The Bloody Red Baron. Amazing. And that was 1995.
Wow.
Oh, you better look into that so you get some money. This woman, Kim Newman, she wrote a novel called The Bloody Red Baron in 95, and it features Red Baron and Snoopy, but she didn't use the name Snoopy to avoid the copyright, you know. But you better look into that.
Well, the backstory behind Snoopy versus the Red Baron was Dick Holler had written a song in, I don't know, 63 or 4 that was called The Red Baron.
Right.
And as a straight historical thing, kind of like Johnny Cynthia Bismarck, what's that guy's name?
Johnny Horton.
I can't remember. Yeah, Johnny Horton, thank you. Yeah, Cynthia Bismarck or, you know, one of those historical ballad, you know, a story song.
Mm.
And he wrote this song, The Red Baron, and it really did nothing, never went anywhere. But Phil Gernhardt knew Dick Holler from way back. And when Charles Schulz started drawing Snoopy on his doghouse with his goggles and cursing Red Baron, Phil Gernhardt said, "Hey, Dick, you remember that song you did about the Red Baron? Why don't we take that song, bring it back, and put Snoopy into it and make it kind of a novelty thing?" And that's where the 8x14 legal pad came with, with the lyrics written on it in pencil order. You know, it was just...
So was he... Now, you said that you guys played for him. Now, how did the original melody go? I mean, if you guys played it the way you did, was it vastly different from the melody you guys did?
Oh, it was pretty much exactly what you're used to hearing.
Ah, okay. So when he gave it to you, it wasn't just lyrics. It was with a melody and everything.
Well, he didn't have the music at first.
Right.
He just had the words written on a sheet. We took it back to town, to Ocala, and he said, just 3 or 4 chords, simple chord changes, military feel on the snare drum.
Mm.
And in the meantime, he had gotten with Barry and showed Barry the chord progression they wanted to use and the tune, you know, the melody line to it. So that's pretty much what we put together. And just after the turn of the century in the clear blue skies. It's pretty much like you heard it. But we were kind of goofing around with it. And Phil liked it that way. And he said, no, don't change it.
Cool. Well, thank God Charles Schulz said you could use it. I mean, United Features Syndicate was the comic strip,
they raised their heads and said, wait a minute, you can't use Snoopy, that's Schulz's, and we're his syndicate, and so...
Well, thank God he let you use it, because Squeaky versus the Black Knight, I don't think that would have flown too well, no pun intended, I don't think that would have flown.
Hey, guys.
Joanne, I got him. I have another caller on the line, Steve, and he's got a comment to make. Go ahead, Steve.
Excellent.
Hi, Joanne. How are you? Steve Cannon.
Hey, Steve. Welcome to the show. Thanks for calling. We have Chris Nunley on the phone from the Royal Guard. On the line with us. Chris Nunley from the Royal Guardsmen. Do you want to talk to him?
You know, Chris, I don't know if you remember WGGG in Gainesville.
Sure.
But... that's one of the stations I worked at over the years, and that was during the late 60s and early 70s.
Cool.
I was making a list of Christmas songs. The Christmas song, Mel Torme's classic, Sinatra did it, and, of course, White Christmas and Feliz Navidad, if you're looking at Top 40 or adult contemporary radio stations. But if you did a Top 10 list of the greatest Christmas songs of that era for those stations, Snoopy's Christmas would be on that list.
Cool.
That's amazing.
I would think it's probably still on the list.
Oh, I guarantee it is.
I'm not sure about past Christmas season, but the season before last, it was the number 2 Christmas song played on the radio in, I believe it was in Canada and the U.S.
Wow. That's very impressive. You know what? I've never heard actually the version Snoopy versus Osama during, you know, the Bin Laden years. I never heard that.
It's out there.
Did you guys do it, or did somebody?
Yeah, we did that.
Oh, cool.
Barry Winslow and John Burdett. Barry did all the lead vocals on the Snoopy songs and Baby Let's Wait.
Nice.
Chris, I was reading a piece from the Gainesville newspaper earlier this evening, and apparently you recently had some kind of a 50th anniversary gathering. Is that true?
Yes, we did it. Well, they call it 50th anniversary, but it was like 51 and a half years since Snoopy had released. But yeah, just to keep the numbers even, we played that in St. Pete, which is the city that Phil and Dick's office was in St. Pete on First Avenue, and we played at a real nice little kind of intimate little venue, but it was a great. We had a full house. It's called the Side Door in St. Pete, and I don't know. It was a great reunion. We played hour and a half maybe. It was terrific. We saw a bunch of people we hadn't seen in years and years.
That kind of thing happens
to our
with
shows
that kind
when
of
we
concert.
Were just getting started out in the Tampa Bay area.
What'd you say,
what
Steve?
Kind of response was there to the concert?
Well, it was a full house. There was standing room only.
Always is, right?
Yeah.
Always is with these bands. It's amazing. I love them. I love them all.
We love our fans too.
Yeah. No.
Absolutely.
Great fun, Chris. Great music, lots of fun, no real political message per se, and lots of fun to listen to. And I got to tell you, after 45 years in radio, I still look back at the days when I would play that song every year at Christmas time.
Nice.
Well, thank you, Steve.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. By the way, quick aside, Joanne, may I?
Yes.
Oh, don't feel bad about the Bloody Red Baron. When I heard it the first time, I got it immediately because of the Red Baron's reputation. But
right.
I was playing the song in Northeast Pennsylvania at about the time that the Boys had a hit called Timothy. Now, Timothy was about a mine disaster here in Northeast Pennsylvania. And the survivors of the mine disaster, it was rumored and alleged for years that they, in fact, ate the flesh of one of the miners who died during the mine cave-in.
Well,
so the station I worked for, even though it was a huge hit, and it was a huge hit for a Northeast Pennsylvania band, our company would not let us play the song on the air.
Wow.
So that's the kind of rules that existed back in those days.
Oh, God.
So
yeah,
thanks for letting me on. Chris, continued success.
Steve. Thanks for calling, Steve. We appreciate it. Have a good night, honey.
Thanks,
thank you,
Steve.
So much.
Take care,
Steve. You.
Well, everybody, we have Chris Nunley from, my God, from 19...
Royal Guard.
He's still around from the Royal Guardsmen, and he's fantastic. What a lovely guy. I'm enjoying the whole conversation here. If you guys want to talk to him, give us a call at 646-478-0999. So... I also wanted to say, Chris, I love when you guys added "Hang On, Snoopy" in there. Now you were able to keep the music, but not the lyrics of "Hang On, Snoopy." So
right.
how did they let you keep the music but not the lyric?
Well, when we cut that in the studio, when that part came up, we were singing "Hang On, Snoopy, Snoopy."
Of
hang.
Right.
You know, we didn't want to get in. I mean, the label had to pay some money to Schultz and United Features, and they didn't want to give away some more royalties to the McCoys and Rick Derringer. When it came to that point, they just cut the vocal track out.
Right. Now, when you played the song live, did the audience sing "Hang On, Snoopy" when it got to that point, or "Hang On, Snoopy"?
We say, "Sing it with us," and then we'd go, "Hang On, Snoopy."
Right, I would think they would sing that part, because, I mean, when that part comes on the song, I sing it too.
it does cause confusion with the public, because some people say, "Well, Guzman, can you do that song about Hang On, Snoopy?" And we say, "Well, not exactly."
Right. Well, you don't want to confuse the McCoys with the Guardsmen, obviously. So, you know, but I mean, there's no there was no confusion in my mind. I mean, I know who you are. So, you know. So, how about some serious questions?
Sure.
What was the biggest problem you had to overcome with the release, the touring, everything when it became a hit?
Well, as I mentioned, with that song being released in the week before Thanksgiving in 66, the record label wanted us to tour immediately to support the record.
Wow.
We couldn't because two of us, myself and Bill Bello, had graduated from high school. Everybody else was still in high school.
Oh, wow.
They couldn't tour until Christmas break came.
Right, right.
So
right. And how was your parents this whole time? I mean, they must have been ecstatic, obviously, but, I mean, were they okay with the touring aspect since, you know, you were young guys and everything? Or?
Well, yes, and we had a friend of Phil's. His name was Johnny McCullough, and also a DJ from the St. Pete, Tampa area named his real name is Charles Troxel, but he went by the radio name of Charlie Brown.
How coincidental is that? Right.
So they kind of rode herd on us. We're thinly disguised chaperones, but you know we were just local Florida boys. And we weren't into drugs or doing anything crazy.
Well, you were good boys. Did you become bad boys? Or?
Let me take the fifth on that.
All right. So, what do you enjoy most about being a musician, and what do you hate the most? Are you still touring, by the way?
Occasionally. In fact, I'm going to be on a show that's in Jackson, Tennessee. There's a station called Cool 103 FM. It puts on two big shows a year, one in April and one in October, November, that has individual artists that come, are backed by a band, much in the way that the, are you familiar with the Hippie Fest?
Yeah.
You have a backing band and one or two people come out and do a song by the group they were with. So I've been lucky enough to be chosen by Cool 103 FM. So you're representative for the Royal Guardsmen, so I'll be there.
Does that cause
November 1st, I think.
Great.
First or second in Jackson, Tennessee.
Nice. Does that cause
Carl Perkins?
Yes.
Blue suede shoes?
Yep.
Carl Perkins Auditorium is in Jackson, Tennessee, and that's where the show is held.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Well, before we end the show, we'll say where you're going to be, so that's cool. But does that cause a problem since they only chose you and not the other guys you perform with? And how many guys of the original band play with you when you do play out?
Well, for example, when we did our show down in St. Petersburg, our 50th anniversary, we had five of the original six people. And the only reason we didn't have our sixth, original lead guitarist had passed away.
I read that.
79, so he was obviously no longer available.
Right.
But a fellow that we have known since back in those days is playing lead guitar for us. His name is Pat Waddell. He does a great job.
Great.
But we had five of the original six, and if anybody wants to hire the full band, we are available with all but one of the original six guys.
Excellent.
And not many bands can say that.
No, they can't. No, they can't, because we've had a lot of acts on, unfortunately, guests, I should say, of acts that, unfortunately, the originals are no longer with us. And that's kind of why I want to get you guys on the show. I mean, let's talk about your career and what you're doing while we can. I mean, I don't mean that in a bad way.
You're absolutely
right.
Well.
But I enjoy getting to know each and every one of you, and you're all wonderful people, so I'm just thrilled to have you on, and I appreciate it so much. And if you could change, I think I know what your answer is going to be, because it's going to be my answer, I think. If you could change the music industry, what would you do? Today's music industry, what would you do?
Well, it has changed quite a bit.
Terribly, yes, it has.
In some some instances it's good because artists are writing more of their own material. They have their own publishing companies. They're getting a lot more percentage-wise with the royalties. From back in the 60s when we were at the height of our recording career, standard rate was 3% of 90% of all sales because you had 10% returns, you know, unsold records. So that was the standard rate. So 3% of 90% of a 45 RPM single, which sold for about a dollar. So that's 3 cents. Oh, wait, 90%. So it's 2.7 cents. And that's split six ways amongst the guys that have spent.
Right, and you don't even get publishing for the song because...
No. No. They had publishing back then.
Right. And
they do now.
Yeah, I know. And like every...
But you don't have the network that we used to have as far as for selling product, singles and albums. CDs for a while, but everybody's streaming these days, and the percentages are minuscule.
Exactly. Musically, what would you... Like, in my opinion, what I would do is get all the musicians together and write a petition to the record label heads, the execs, and say, listen, this business is cyclical. Why is it not changing? For the last, like, 10, 15 years, the music is not changing. I'm talking mainstream radio. Here on the East Coast in New York and New Jersey and Connecticut, you know, the metro area, all they play is rap and the dance music. And it's like...
That's what the kids want to listen to, and I can't fault them for that, but...
No, but what about the people writing music like regular rocks, regular ballads? I mean, it's not hitting anybody. There's nowhere to play it, you know?
You don't have the distribution system like we used to.
No, not at all. And it's like what kills me throughout the industry, when I was shopping around and everything, it's like it was always like 65, 70-year-old men, no disrespect to anybody, that were telling kids what to listen to. And that's what they're doing now. You have to, I don't know how old they are now, but back then in the 70s and 80s, I mean, they were older executives telling people what to listen to. And the only reason they're listening to this music is because that's all they're putting out. So
I
think we should get together and say, let's put some shit out that people want to hear. And people would buy the CDs. They'd buy it. Especially us older folks, because we don't stream shit. We want the thing in our hand. We want to play it.
I agree.
We want to pop it in our car. We want to put it in a CD player. You know what I mean?
I do.
Know.
I know exactly what you mean.
And it's very frustrating to me how the music industry has just changed. I mean, the fact that they can actually promote in a different way is better with the online stuff, but there's no profit. The only profit is in touring. That's it.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway, that was my exactly.
Your soapbox, Joanne.
Is it called a soapbox these days? Yes, sir, John.
I don't know. But
hey, Joanne,
you're right.
They're also
100% with you. It's a shame and it's changed.
They're also listening to it on their telephone, which has a speaker the size of, you know, a pencil tip, and they don't get the full sound of a band.
Right.
Or if they do, they go to a club and it's just blasting.
Half of them don't even use bands. Come on.
But it's not the same. It's not the same as having a stereo with two speakers. So, you know, they're missing out on a lot of stuff.
When you are used to hearing an LP or a single through a decent system, there's all the difference in the world sonic, the quality of it.
Exactly. Well, folks, we're listening to Chris Nunley from the Royal Guardsmen. Give us a call if you want to talk to him, and let us know what you were doing when the Red Baron came out and how that song and how it affected you and what it means to you, what kind of memories does it bring back for you? We'd love to hear your opinion. So, Chris, give us All right. So are you semi-retired now?
Pretty much. I still do music locally here on weekends and things with a local band. I am retired from the labor force. I did that in 2012. So when that was when I turned 66, and my wife and I took a cruise vacation to Alaska the week after I retired. So kind of a celebration, and it's been wonderful ever since.
Nice. Have you guys ever done the Flower Power cruise? Were you ever involved in that, or any of these Happy Together tours?
We have seen the Happy Together and Hippie Fest. We are booked for the Flower Power cruise in 2020.
Great. Congratulations. That's fantastic. It sounds like a great show. I mean, it's got so many people on it. I mean,
I know. I wish we had gone in this year, 2019, but we couldn't.
I wish I could go in general.
It was full.
Yeah, wow. But, I mean, the band itself, I mean, has the Guardsmen played at any of the Flower Powers or the Happy Together tours?
Actually haven't. I would like to do that, but so far my offer of the Guardsmen being available has fallen on deaf ears.
That's not good. I guess, you know, those guys are all retired as well, so, you know, but...
And Joanne, every Memorial Day weekend, there's a festival in Jeffersonville, Indiana, called Abbey Road on the River.
Oh.
Are you familiar with that?
No, not at all.
It's Beatles tributes bands from all over the world.
Oh, interesting.
In fact, up until 2 years ago, it was held in Louisville, right across the river.
Mm.
And then they decided to move it across the river to Jeffersonville, Indiana. It's a real nice park.
Why that location? That has nothing to do with the Beatles. Why that location? Just because the size?
Originally, the organizer of it, the gentleman's name is Gary Jacob, and Gary started out doing it in Cleveland, I believe.
Ah, okay, Cleveland. It was Hall of Fame,
adjacent to the Hall of Fame, right.
Right, right, okay.
But then he decided to move to Louisville. Not sure why he chose that, but great place. They had it there for 10 years or so.
Mm.
And then the last 2 years or three, this is third year, I'm speaking to my wife, Karen.
Hello, Karen.
Hi.
We've gone, our first year going to Abbey Road on the River was in 2010, and we said, we got to do this every year.
Mm.
So we did 1 year we missed because of a schedule conflict,
right.
But we've gone every year since, and we're already made our deposits for this coming year, 2020.
Very nice. I'm sure you guys will have a nice time, and you probably know all the artists that are there. You probably know them personally.
Quite a few of them, yes.
I'm sure of that. So you guys were pretty much British Invasion pop bubblegum, sort of. So now it's the 50th anniversary of Woodstock. What were you doing around that time with the Woodstock going on? I mean, since it was mainly all rock, heavy rock, you know?
Yeah. We were out on tour that summer.
Oh, okay. So
we heard about it on the radio and said, gee, that'd be cool to do, but we had already been scheduled for the dates that the Woodstock Festival fell on.
I think they should do a Woodstock with all the bands from the 60s, like the vein of music that the Guardsmen do and the Grassroots and everybody. I mean, you know, I think that would be fantastic to call it Goodstock.
Well, a lot of us are still around.
Right, I know. We've had a lot of guests on, and I love having you guys on because this music, I mean, shaped music and these kids today have no idea about it. So it's like, let's let people know. And if they don't want to know, let's let the people who love it enjoy it again and know what, you know, about you. You know what I mean? Because it's been so long. Let's let people know about you. I mean, why not? You know, I enjoyed knowing you and getting to know everything about you. And as a music fan, I would think most people would. So I just love having you guys on, and it's been a thrill. And not only am I the co-creator of the show and the co-host, but I'm a fan. So that's what makes the show so great for me. I love it. So,
well, thank you.
Yeah, and we have some more great guests coming up, and you know, we hope you if you want to join us again anytime, please feel free. But let us know, where can people get more information about you, Chris, or the band itself?
Well, we had a website and it crashed, and we haven't been able to get it up and running. It's royalguardsman.net.
Okay. So keep trying back, people. Go to royalguardsman.net until it gets back up, and you'll find it eventually.
It's such a change from back in the day. You know, you had the teen magazines and everything. And
yeah.
As you Google anything, you can find virtually anything.
Exactly.
On the electric interweb.
John, do you have any questions for Chris, as Mr. Musician over there?
Well, are you still using the same equipment, Chris, that you had back then, or did you switch to the newer equipment and, you know, like guitars?
We've upgraded. In fact, the Vox stuff is still being used and is still available, but it's gotten very expensive.
And upgraded, I'm sure, in all kinds of different
ways. And these days, everybody, you know, back then it was, you had an amplifier and you turned it up and that was it. Had a very, very rudimentary PA system, but these days the PAs are fantastic, and everybody can carry a small amp and just mic it and put it out through the big system, and it sounds great.
Right.
So a lot of people have downsized, and we used to tote around a Hammond B3 organ and two Leslie cabinets, and now they got Hammond makes a compact that sounds just like the big ones, but, you know, you can carry it under one arm.
Mm. That's right. Yeah.
Whoever, who used to open for you guys? I mean, you probably did like a compilation with bands, or did you usually play by yourselves, or who used to open for you guys?
Well, for instance, that first Christmas of '66 tour we did, they flew us out to the West Coast, and we did a show with the Jefferson Airplane, at that time they were called.
Yeah, cool.
The Mandels, Paul Revere, and the Raiders.
Oh, cool.
You know, the current bands that were big on the charts.
Right. Wow.
We were the newcomers.
Jefferson Airplane isn't even, like, close to the type of music that you guys were doing.
Well, they're still together.
No, I know. But they were more drug stuff. So, you know, you guys weren't doing that. You were doing the happy poppy songs, which I love. So.
And we played shows with the Turtles.
Oh, nice. I love the Turtles.
Yeah, they're great guys.
Yeah, love the Turtles.
Tommy James and the Shondells.
Love him.
Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs.
Yep, love him. Every one of them. Every last one of them.
Back the summer of '67, we were on a bus tour for the month of June with Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs, Tommy James and the Shondells, and you remember Keith?
Yep, 98.6, you back again.
Even his band, The Wild Kingdom, we were all on that bus tour. And it
That's
was like
cool.
28 shows in 30 days or something like that. It was crazy.
Oh, my God, yeah. Well, you were young, so it's okay.
Yeah, we can.
You could do it then, you know.
I know.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
In fact, that summer, that June, I turned 21, and I bought my first legal six-pack of beer.
Yeah.
The guy didn't even ask me for an ID. I was kind of disappointed.
What was your influences when you were starting out and when you used to play?
Oh, man, so many. Everybody from Ray Charles and Otis Redding to the Beatles to Rolling Stones. We used to play stuff by Paul Revere and the Raiders, the Animals, the Kinks.
Right.
You know, all stuff that was popular on the radio. We were a very good cover band.
Right. That's great.
When we hit with with our records. And, of course, we felt kind of pigeonholed as a novelty band when actually we were pretty doggone good musicians.
Right, right, right. That was the thing I was going to ask you, too. I mean, you know, unfortunately, you got stereotyped into being a novelty band with the novelty song. And I'm sure you had so many other great songs. I mean, you had a ton of songs. You had, I Say Love. That's about Christmas, too. Oh, you got a lot of Christmas stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and the Airplane Song, which actually was used, Red Bull had a advertising campaign. It's probably been about 10 years ago now. There was people would put together these contraptions out of balsa wood and cardboard and try to fly off the end of a dock and, of course, plummet straight down into the water.
And they used the Airplane Song for that?
Yeah, they used that as a background song for their advertising.
Oh, great. That's great. That's great. I love it. I wish I would have heard the Snoopy Osama song. I never heard that.
You can find it on YouTube.
Oh, of course I can, yeah, but I didn't know you did that. And I was like, oh, God, why don't I remember that song? John, do you remember hearing that, Snoopy versus Osama? John?
John.
Well, I haven't heard that song, no. But
no,
I'm watching
me
this,
either.
Chris, what other hobbies do you have when you're not touring or doing music? What do you do?
Yeah.
Well, just before the interview, I was mowing the yard.
That's a hobby?
Yeah, I don't think that's a
hobby.
That's
a hobby?
No, it's not a hobby. It's more like, well, in Florida, this time of year, when it rains as much as it does, a couple of times a week.
Well, I hope you have a ride on.
I do.
Great. It gets hot. It's hot down there right now.
Yeah, I'm used to it.
Yeah. Well, you grew up there, right? You're not a transplant. You grew up there.
Well, I wasn't born in Florida, but my family moved here in 1956 when I was 10. So.
Ah, where'd you move from?
Well, I was born in Kentucky, and then we moved to Iowa, and I was in Iowa for 3 or 4 years.
Well,
then we moved to Florida, so.
Yeah, you were a very good boy. You were a Midwestern boy, yes.
Pretty much.
And Chris, your dad was a doctor, right? Your dad was a doctor?
Yes. In fact, that's why he was going to college at Wesleyan University in Kentucky, Owensboro, Kentucky, where I was born. And then we moved to Iowa when he went into his medical school at Still Osteopathic Hospital in Des Moines, Iowa. He lived there for 4 years while he was going to school, and then it was time to spread his wings and fly as a doctor, so he said, we're moving to Florida because of the snow and all that stuff we experienced in Iowa.
What kind of doctor was your dad?
Osteopathic physician.
Oh, wow. 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 Was he disappointed you became a musician? Just curious.
No, he was... he was happy. I mean,
well, once you got the hit, he was happy. Yeah.
Exactly.
How was he before the hit? That's the question.
He wasn't so happy about that.
Exactly.
The haircuts and stuff and the Rolling Stones and the birds would come on TV and he'd say, oh, that's disgusting.
Right. So what were you supposed to be? What would you be doing if you weren't a musician? How's that?
Well, people said you ought to be a doctor like your dad. I said, I don't know. I started school at the University of Florida going for pre-dental, be a dentist. And then the music thing happened. And
That's great.
I kind of warped my values.
right. Wow. But
we were lucky we had success fairly, within a year or two.
Right, easily.
Band going.
Thank God.
Virtually an overnight success.
Right. Well, it doesn't happen much anymore. It used to happen back in the day because, they were looking for all kinds of music. And I remember stories about, songwriters hanging out at the Brill Building in New York, like Carole King and those guys. And, if there was... I swear, if I was born back then, I'd be doing the same thing, and I'd probably have a hit myself.
Well, I
always wish that was
the studio that we recorded a lot of our records in was called Allegro Studio, also where Tommy James recorded his Roulette records. But that's right in the basement of 30 Rock.
Right, right. Well, I know Moni Moni, I think he got, when he was in New York, he couldn't come up with the name of the song for Moni Moni, and then he saw a sign for the Moni, God, I can't remember.
In New York.
Yeah, it was a building with a sign with Moni on it, and that's what he used. That's how he got the name Moni Moni.
Exactly.
I think they should make the Brill Building a like an attraction. I really do. I mean, there's so much history in there. My God.
Yeah, absolutely.
So much history. I mean, you got Lever and Stoller did a lot of work in there. Oh
yes.
My God, that's amazing to me. I mean,
The songs for the Coasters, I love the Coasters. Anything they did.
Oh, God, yeah. Everything was great. Everything. I mean, nothing was bad. Nothing was bad. And I said the other night on the show that I don't think the kids, the music they're listening today is going to be the way music was in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, where people are like, oh, man, remember that song? And oh, I remember what I was doing. It was great. It was, I felt good. I mean, I think they're just going to go to the wayside. I mean, because the bands from the 50s, 60s, and 70s are still touring. And they all get together, and they have millions of people flock to see them. I don't think
somebody can sit in their bedroom with a laptop and a beat machine and an auto tune, and they can just put something out that becomes an overnight hit.
Right, but I don't think they're going to have the longevity as the music
that we have.
I don't think they're going to have it. I really don't.
The attention span is so short these days.
Oh, exactly, exactly. It was funny, my son the other day, he likes rap, and I told him, I said, put a C in front of it because I can't stand it.
Exactly.
Said, yeah, I mean,
that's not my cup of tea, but are those
right.
who...
So we're listening to it, and I said, the beat's not bad. I said, what's the song about? He goes, I don't know. He didn't even know the lyrics. I said, are you kidding me? I said, don't you know how to listen to music? What is wrong with you? So they don't even know the lyrics.
Yeah, but true.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean.
Well, Joanne, I think MTV had a lot to do with changing everybody's view on music, because it wasn't only music anymore; it was visuals that went along with the song. And if you notice, there's a cut every 5 seconds to get everyone's attention. They couldn't last more than 5 seconds watching something.
Right. Right. Well, that's a question I have for you. What the videos that were made of bands back in the day, of you guys performing, or all the musicians back then, what were they supposed to be used for?
Well, because... I'm not really sure. We did a filmed clip for, there was a TV show that came back several times back in the 60s and 70s that was... Lee Mendelson had put together, who was a TV producer.
Mm-hmm.
It was called The Fabulous Funnies, and it dealt with a lot of different comic strips.
Mm-hmm.
And we shot a what basically was referred to as a video.
Mm-hmm.
Videos didn't exist at that time, but we did we lip-synced to our Snoopy vs. the Red Baron on a little airstrip in Tampa area that some guy had a biplane, and we did this thing. And if you can find it on the internet, it might be available on YouTube. It's just Snoopy versus the Red Baron, Lee Mendelson and his Fabulous Funnies. I'm not sure. I haven't looked it up, but you can find it.
Yeah, I have to check. No, I just always was so curious about all the videos that were made, because they weren't being played on TV. So what was the purpose? I mean, because there was no MTV, and I know Dick Clark actually took all those videos and did something with them, but at the time when you did them, what were you going to do with them? And
it was for that TV show.
Just for that show, and like all the artists that they did videos for, that was for that show only at the time?
Well, I can't speak for the other artists, but they...
That for you, that was the case, yeah.
Yeah, Phil Gernhardt said... they're going to do this TV special called The Fabulous Funnies about the comic strips. And at that time, Snoopy was big. And he said, we're going to shoot some film and integrate the song into it and be part of the TV show. So
cool.
That's how it came about. But it was, if you watch it, if you can find it, it's basically a music video.
Were you guys on Ed Sullivan?
No, we were supposed to be on Ed Sullivan.
Hmm.
Everybody was real excited about it. We told our family, our friends, oh, man, we're going to be on Ed Sullivan. And then, like, the week before, the Monkees came out with I'm a Believer.
Yeah, they wouldn't let you guys get to number one.
yeah, they blocked us out of number one.
Yeah, they kept knocking you out.
And so anytime anybody says, oh, man, do you like the Monkees? I say, no.
However, you're good friends with Mickey Dolan, I'm sure.
We played a show, it was Milwaukee Pop in 1969, and Mickey was there, the Monkees. We played, at that time, very little known, was Bob Seger with his Seger system. That was even before the Silver Bullet Band.
It sounds like it, yep. Sounds like it's before
Tommy
that, yeah.
Tommy James and Shondells were on the show. And
wow.
The Bar Caves and, you know, just a huge selection, different artists and bands. But, we were staying in the same hotel with Mickey Dolan. He was playing the piano in the hotel bar. And
he was crazy then.
Having a big time.
Exactly. But now, I'm sorry. I'm just so curious about that time. I feel like I should have been born then. And it's like, oh, my God, I'm not. And it kills me because I really wish I was there.
It was great.
Oh, I know. I wish, you have no idea that I could go back to that era. But a question about Ed Sullivan. I know you weren't on it, but now every time I watch Ed Sullivan, I can't tell if they're singing live because a lot of them didn't even use microphones. However, the song was off a little bit when they did their vocals. So
yes.
What kind of mics did they use to pick them up? There was no mic in sight. So,
well, they used to do a lot of lip syncing stuff.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. Were they live or not?
Some of them were. I can't speak for Ed Sullivan, never having done the show. But we did, a guy named Mike Douglas used to have a show out of Philadelphia.
Yes, love Mike Douglas. I used to watch it all the time.
You can find clips from that, Snoopy versus the Red Baron and Snoopy's Christmas.
Yeah,
it's
I love
black
Mike
and white.
Douglas.
It's black and white film, not color. But they played the track, but we sang the vocals live.
Right. That's live, yeah. Singing, you know, if you sing it, like you're singing the tracks. That's, you know, that's fine. You know,
and we also did, Joey Bishop used to have a nighttime show about the same time as Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
Only
it
was a different
the
network.
Joey Bishop show, yep. The Joey Bishop show, yep.
Yeah, and we did while we were out in California, we did the Joey Bishop show too.
And was that live?
Yes.
Oh, cool. Okay. Because I know, I mean, now it's all lip singing. You're not going to get, you know.
There's no mics around.
Right. There's no way these artists today can do that dancing and singing the way they do. I mean, there's no way to do it live. I mean, I know from based on the bands that I've seen, I also am a music critic for a couple of publications, and the bands that I've reviewed over the past year or so, they definitely sing over the tracks. You'll get once in a while where they sing along with it. You know, they got to catch their breath in there. You know what I mean? So
yes.
Yeah.
Well, there are a lot of artists that tour with just, they've got a CD of music.
Right.
They give it to whoever's running the sound system, and they sing along live to it. But we call them a track show.
Right. Tracks, all tracks. Cool. But let me ask you this. Now, okay, you said, where are you going to be in November, hon? I forgot.
Jackson, Tennessee.
Jackson, Tennessee, November 21st, I believe, right?
No, it's either the 1st or the 2nd.
Oh, I'm sorry. I know you said something about
second.
The 1st. So,
yeah.
Okay, well, if you guys, all our listeners, we're getting close to the end of the show, unfortunately. But if anybody would like to get more information on Chris, you could go to his website. Do you have your own website, Chris, or no?
I've got a Facebook page. I don't have a website, per se.
Uh-huh. Okay,
my real name is Marvin Christopher Nunley. Everybody that knows me calls me Chris, but
right.
Facebook is under Marvin Nunley.
Right, because I know when you reached out to me, you said, you know, my name is Chris. I was like, no, I have known you as Marvin. We got to know each other as Marvin, so.
I'll answer to either one. I'll answer to anything. You can call me anything, just don't call me late for dinner.
Yeah, I knew that was coming.
We're getting to the end of the show, Joanne, so we want to thank Chris for coming on tonight.
Yes, Chris, thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Chris Nunley from the fabulous Royal Guardsmen and their hit songs, the Snoopy songs, and you can see them on YouTube. And if you don't already own the 45, if you still have your 45s, which I do. So, Chris, thank you so much for joining us. It's a pleasure. If you ever want to come back, please reach out. We'd love to have you back on.
Oh, it's my honor, my pleasure. Thank you, Joanne.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you so much,
well,
Chris. Have a great night.
You have a good night, Chris. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. John, we just have an announcement for our fans. If you guys, we're going to be off this week. We're going to be doing some enhancing to the show. And we're going to come back. We're going to have a YouTube channel of the show. And work on the website a little bit, things like that. So we're going to take this week off, and we'll be back with some fantastic guests. Wait till you see who we have coming up. And some new sponsors. So, John, anything you want to add?
Well, I just want to thank everybody for listening, and then we'll see you when we get back after our little hiatus.
You got it. Listen, everybody, thank you so much. Chris, thank you again. John, thank you, Honey Bunny. And everybody have a good night. And don't work too hard this week.
Take care. Good night, everyone.
Take care, everybody. Thank you.